2017. Three men joined together in a pact to see what they could collectively do to advance civilization, further the cause of world peace, and elevate mankind. These three men were internationally renowned musician and Linkin Park multi-instrumentalist Dave Phoenix Ferrell, multiple PGA Tour champion and world-class golfer Brendan Steele, and Mark. They named themselves the Members. Those who they chose to sit with and ponder the mysteries of the universe, they named the Guests. What you're about to listen to is one of those historic conversations. Welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. Welcome to Member Guest.
Welcome, guys. We're here. Here we are. We are in beautiful Palm Desert, California today. We've taken the... I gotta finish my almond I just ate.
Cut that part off.
Mark, edit this.
No, this is all good. This should stay.
We lost our headphones and here's Dave's almond.
All right. Welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. We're in La Quinta, California. I'm joined with some of my best friends, Mr. Mark Fiore, Mr. Brendan Steele. How are we doing, boys?
We're doing good. We're off to a little bit of a rocky start here.
Well, I think we're just feeling our way, which is totally authentic and fun. And Dave's eating almonds. And, you know, we're on the road, but we have the brewery beers with us. So that will definitely help us as we move along here. We have an awesome guest today. One of my favorite people in the world.
It's a little strong, no?
A little strong? You know?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Go on. Your wedding. He played his college golf at Vanderbilt, turned pro in 2009, 79 career PGA Tour starts, 8 top 10s, including 2 playoff losses, which we can or cannot talk about.
There was a wince there.
I was there for one of them, and I've never been so nervous in my entire life. We've got the artist and wedge master himself and my funniest friend.
I hate when you say that.
Mr. John Curran, or John Wedge III.
Yeah, well, guys, thanks for having me. Brendan's been talking a lot about this podcast, and it sounds like it's going to be a really fun time. Dave, Linkin Park has been like a huge, huge thing in my growing up.
As with everyone.
Yeah, as with everyone. And it's really cool to be here. This will be fun.
Part of the reason that I had to say that you're my funniest friend is because I know that it puts pressure on you and it makes you uncomfortable.
What I just said, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, you're just going to go, oh my God, what do I say? Like, thanks guys. I guess I'm here and he's told me a lot and it's going to be fun. I don't know.
You said that earlier when we were hanging out.
I know.
Funniest friend.
Tried to double time it to make it really uncomfortable. But I do like that you took exception to me saying that you're one of my favorite people. That's good. I like that.
What did I say?
Well, you said, oh, well, that's a little strong.
Well, I mean, that's a very good compliment. I've never received a compliment.
Like yeah.
Even Keegan won't even say something like
that. Well, here's the thing with that. I mean, we've got this great group of friends that I've been lucky enough to be kind of adopted by. The guys are all have been friends for a long time. A lot of them came from St. John's, and then Keegan and John played high school golf together. But it's not the group of friends that gives each other a lot of support.
Zero support.
Yeah, or encouragement or compliments or even talking about this podcast. I had Keegan listen to the first episode and he was like, okay, don't make this weird and don't thank me and blah, 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 you know, whatever. I thought it was really good. And I guess I won't say thanks. I was listening to it with him
and he was like, God, this is good.
Man, like he was upset. Yeah, he was like, I was hoping it would be so terrible. But here we are.
I feel like looking in from the outside, you guys have a group of friends on tour. How did that come together? Like, what's the history behind that for all you guys' different relationships?
I guess for the tour, Keegan and Brendan came out on the same year, 2011, right? And they became close friends, fast friends. And then, I mean, I just got to know you through Keegan. I don't know. It just
all kind of fell together. For me, I mean, I feel like the group was already very well established, and then I was accepted as the token West Coast friend. It's very, I think, Northeast in the sense that there isn't that like support and encouragement and everything. It's more just like
tough love.
Yeah, and you know that somebody likes you when they're giving you shit the whole time. Mm-hmm. And if they're like too nice to you, then either they don't know you well enough yet or they really don't like you.
That's a pretty strong test, I think, among the guys that we hang out with. If I'm around Brendan, if I'm around some of our other friends, Mark's a little bit excluded because Mark's pretty nice, generally nice dude, where some of the rest of us are a little more on the spectrum, we're more.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me, Dave.
Dude, I said best friends earlier, Mark. I just saw you beaming with joy at that.
He is. He's smiling. Mark
and I have known each other since we were 5 years old. We grew up playing soccer together. After that, we started playing in bands together. Now we've worked together in all different types of capacities. And in like the Linkin Park world, Mark and I will fight and bicker. And I don't even realize we're doing it because mm-hmm. we kind of tend to get into a mode that's almost more like brothers at times. It'll make people who don't know us very well uncomfortable, especially when it's in the context of like, dude, that's like a guy from Linkin Park. And the guy he's like talking shit to and they're like going back and forth is like a videographer. Like, what is it? What am I witnessing right now?
Totally.
I don't realize that's what's going on until after the fact when people are like, dude, you guys are just kind of going after each other. If someone's acting too nicely towards somebody, it's an immediate indication that they don't like that person.
100%.
John, so we did talk about it a little bit before we started talking for real mm-hmm. or recording, but what you are feeling is that I do have East Coast roots.
Oh, yeah.
I could feel it.
I could sense it.
Yeah, you could sense that. Yeah. I've got a little bit of a Plymouth background. Lived there.
Plymouth Rock.
Yeah. I think I was 2 blocks from the Rock.
Were you really?
2 blocks. So some Pilgrim blood in me for sure. My first baseball game I ever went to was at Fenway.
Mm-hmm.
Lifetime Red Sox fan. First football game was the Patriots. Obviously a Patriots fan.
Obviously.
That's the warmth you're feeling towards me.
And good. I can pick up on it as well.
I can see it in your eyes. Yeah.
God, Massachusetts is like the best. If I could live there as a professional golfer, I would. I feel like I couldn't do it though.
Meaning if the weather was decent?
If the weather was decent, yeah.
How do you grow up in a place like that? Me, if I'm being completely honest, we don't have that much in common because my family moved out of that frozen place when I was 5 years old to sunny California. Do you just not play golf for six months?
Yeah, you kind of don't. I feel like it's more than 6 months. But when I was growing up, there was a place called the Golf Dome, which is like this big, huge bubble. I couldn't imagine doing it now, but there's a big, huge bubble and it was like a 30-yard long net. And you would hit from mats into the net for as long as the snow was there for. It was just you couldn't fathom it.
That's similar.
But that's how I grew up playing. So that was normal to me.
I grew up hitting balls into a net, so I can fathom it. Yeah, because there's no golf course in Idyllwild, up in the mountains, So I had a net in my backyard, and that's how I learned to play. And the net wasn't 30 feet from me; it was like 6. But you know when you hit a good shot. You can tell
you can
when you hit
it
solid. And it's good. I mean, I always tell people, too, it's like it's just always good to have a club in your hand, whatever you're doing, whether you're hitting balls into a net.
Yeah, I actually think it was good for me. I mean, a lot of the guys that I played golf with, they lived down in North Carolina. I was so jealous of them. They could play all year long. But a lot of them didn't really pan out.
It can be good to have a break.
It's good to have a break. And so you go and you, every day, all you do is after school, you go to the Golf Dome and you hit balls into a net for 45 minutes.
Yeah, you can only do it for 45 minutes because it's too miserable.
Yeah. I don't know. I actually think about that a lot. I could have gotten easily burnt out.
Did you balance that out with other sports growing up?
Not in high school. No, I mean, I did all this normal stuff that everybody did. Golf was pretty much the main bang.
Did you balance it out with spray painting in those days?
I would have loved to, but I was too afraid of getting in trouble and ruining my golf career.
So Johnny is a big spray painter. Does some amazing work. I hate to say that too because I hate giving compliments.
So weird. My toes are curled.
I know it's bad. And
you're
and
bracing for the insult that's about to come.
When our other friends listen to this, they're going to be like, "Wow, that was creepy."
No, they'll have to
like
fast forward.
Yeah, but he does some really cool stuff. He's done his dog and wife.
I never spray painted my dog.
Yeah, you did.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh no, I did.
You did a Walter.
You're right. I did.
So
a Walter.
So talk us through what you like to do with that because it's kind of a unique thing, at least for me. Yeah. I don't really know anything about it, but I think what you do is totally different from any kind of art that I've seen. I think it's really awesome.
A can of spray paint is very difficult to control, so it's not like a paintbrush where you have like direct contact to the canvas. So it's like very high pressured and it comes out like if you grabbed a can of spray paint and you saw like somebody that did even like a piece of graffiti off the side of the road, you'd be like, wow, this is actually like hard to make it look halfway decent. Anybody who does any sort of like fine art with spray paint just blows me away.
A lot of the stuff you do, I mean, it's all like triangles and very mathematical and like it takes a lot of different aspects into it than just being creative.
Yeah, I mean, I've done some like, I guess they call it polyagonal art. So I go on like a Photoshop and then take an image and then like just kind of block out the different shapes of colors that I like. And then next thing you know, you have like the image, but kind of abstract in triangles. You print it out and it has, say, you know, one line is 3/4 inch. And then you put it on your canvas. If the canvas is X bigger than the printout, it's X times that 3/4 inch. And then you just kind of just go through it and draw it and take it. I enjoy it because it kind of immerses me in the process of the actual painting. It's almost like golf. The round of golf, your end goal is your is a score, and then you have the holes, and then you have the shots that you hit in those holes, and then you have the lies that you have on the holes, or the clubs that you're hitting into the holes. And then a painting is like you get in, especially on a larger scale, you get into it really close, and you're doing these little lines, and you're moving these colors around, and then you back up, and then it's next thing you know, it's the painting. So it's kind of like losing yourself in the process of the whole end game. I really like that.
Did you grow up studying art or?
Not really. I mean, I took some art classes in high school, mm-hmm. but that was it. And then I fell in love with graffiti for whatever reason. I mean, graffiti obviously has a bad like reputation.
Only in certain circles.
Only in certain circles. But I mean, it's obviously illegal in a lot of situations, but it can really transform a dilapidated area like
right,
like that place in Berlin. And then there's another place in close to us where I live in Miami called Wynwood Walls. It was this old like neighborhood of just buildings that were uninhabited, and they transformed it into a huge, huge mecca for like muralists and spray paint art. It's really cool.
When you're painting, are you listening to music? Do you kind of get in your own zone?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really paint. I couldn't imagine being like an actual artist that has to produce work. Because when I paint, I just do it whenever whenever it comes to me. It's usually in my garage, so I'll be going to the golf course in the morning, and I'll open the garage door and work on it for 10 minutes and then leave and then come back and work on it for 10 minutes. When I take a day off, I look forward to putting on some music, putting on Linkin Park radio on Pandora and really just jamming out.
A moment of honesty, guys. I can't stand Linkin Park radio on Pandora. Can we just kind of get that out there?
I had Linkin Park radio on Pandora the other day, and Eminem came on.
I like that. Well, I like Eminem.
I don't mind Eminem, but I didn't put it in the same genre.
The problem for me, I will admit 100%, this is my own ego and pride, and the problem for me is in a weird way reflecting back upon me. So if something comes on there that I don't like, it's almost like my feelings get hurt in a weird way. Like, oh, really? Like, oh, man.
They're saying we're the same as these guys.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, like, right. Like oh, they put us in the same category as those guys?
Totally. Which is admittedly, it's super weird that I go there, but that's where I go with it. Maybe it's not weird. Maybe it's normal.
I think it makes sense.
I feel like I do the same thing.
I take it personally.
100%.
The other thing is that I feel like with Linkin Park, we've done so many different things sound-wise in different genres that it opens up a door to anything in any different genre that me, just being a normal music listener guy, I might love it or I might hate it. And it opens up the door to so many different avenues that I could be, yes, that's awesome. Or just like, oh, crap. Like,
oh,
really?
Those
like,
guys.
That's what you're...
Well, it would be hard to have the same door from Hybrid Theory open to whatever else they would put in there with it. And then the same door to One More Light. Right. Or A Thousand Suns or whatever, and opening it up to all these different things. Now you've got an infinite number of songs and bands that people could say, well, maybe this kind of fits with this a little. And when it comes on, you go, oh, no, this doesn't fit at all. I hate this.
Yeah.
If you want a Pandora station that will never let you down, Huey Lewis and the News.
He's playing here.
He's playing this week.
Really? His Pandora station's awesome, too.
Huey's kind of a friend of mine.
Hey.
Kind of a good dude.
He's a golfer.
I've played golf with Huey.
Yeah, he's a major golfer. He plays in all the big pro-ams.
I've played with him in Scotland.
You played with everyone.
Dave, we get it. You know Huey.
was that the Dunlap that you played
in? Can I tell you guys a funny Huey Lewis story?
Yes.
So 2 years ago, I get invited to go out and play the Dunhill out in Scotland. The Dunhill invitation is the European Tour's equivalent of the Pebble Beach Pro-Am.
St. Awesome. Andrews, Kings Barnes, Carnoustie.
That is the rotation.
Serious rotation.
And it is awesome. And so I get invited to go out and play. Before I leave for Scotland, I get an email from some of the coordinators saying, you know, would you be interested in playing in the band on Saturday night? There's like a big gala for all the AMs. Some of the pros come out. Are you okay playing with that? Like Huey's going to be playing, some other people. And being me, I'm like, I just want to make sure that I'm contributing somewhat to this tournament itself or to the invite. I'm like, just tell me the song, tell me whatever it is. I'll try not to mess it up. That's my mentality going into it. So I show up day one. I'm on the range. I meet Huey. Huey's like the best guy you could ever imagine. Friday night, I'm in my hotel room with YouTube on my phone, air bassing, trying to figure out the tutorial on how to play the bass line for Mustang Sally.
You're playing air tabs?
Air tabs. Thankfully, it's not a super hard song. It's pretty, you know, part A, part B, part A, part B, repeat. Come the evening of, me, Brian, McFadden go up, playing the song, jamming. I'm like, all right, this is going pretty well. I look over, like Tico Torres has stayed up to play drums. Tico's from Bon Jovi. You know, we've met that week. We're hanging out. I'm like, this is kind of awesome. Mm. This is super fun. It's a little bit of like an all-star jam. I look at the dance floor. Huey Lewis, who had started the night, is out on the dance floor by himself, dancing with one person. And I look out. The person he has asked to dance is my wife. Okay, so we're 30 seconds, maybe 45 seconds into playing Mustang Sally. And this whole time, I realized she's been trying to get like my eye contact because she's just loving it. She's super stoked. She's like, this is the funniest thing in the world. I'm basically at the equivalent of like the nicest wedding you could ever imagine as far as the catering and the setup and the tents and everything else. I'm dancing with Huey Lewis, just me and him. She loves Huey Lewis and grew up with his songs, whatever else. They're the only people on the dance floor. And then it's like, P.S. I'm trying to get my husband's attention, who's playing bass. And they're dancing to Mustang Sally.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was my beginnings with Huey. Since then, we've become buddies. Huey, if you ever were to listen to this, I will give you a rematch next year at the Dunhill if I get the invite. Me and Brian kind of laid the wood to Huey and Tico this past year in a little match. But
do you get nervous on that first take?
I do.
How nervous do you get? Like,
so, okay.
Oh my God, nervous or?
It's different. And it's the same thing for me. Like, it's a feeling similar to public speaking. You know, if there's a big crowd and I've got to like, okay, now you've got to go up and accept an award. You got to go do something. There's a component to that. There's an anxiety to that that is like butterflies.
Best man speech?
Best man.
God almighty.
We were talking about this earlier today.
Best man speech. Yeah. Ruins. It's amazing that that's a thing because it puts somebody in such a predicament that they can't enjoy the night.
So we had, in our close group of friends, we had three weddings, basically back to back to back within 6 weeks of each other. John had to give the best man speech at Keegan's wedding, and Keegan gave the best man speech at John's wedding. Brandon, so there's a little competition
right
there, too.
Let's just settle this right now. Whose is better?
Oof.
Come on.
Yeah, that's Come what on. I want to know.
Out with it. Out
so
with it.
I was extremely drunk at both. It will be my preface. I'm gonna give the edge to John though.
I would hope so. I finished that and I went over to Val and I was like, I was like nailed up.
Full fist pump.
Who's more nervous? Keegan or John?
Keegan, for sure. Keegan's more nervous about anything that's not golf. Like anything that he does that's not golf, he's more uncomfortable. Right? I mean That was a big deal. As much as you thought it ruined your night to have to do it for him, I mean, imagine what he was going through to have to do it for you. It would have been 10 times worse.
Couldn't imagine it.
But honestly, he nailed it too. I thought he was going to struggle more than he did because it's such an uncomfortable thing. It's kind of like Dave trying to hit golf shots, right? Well, because
that's supposed to mean.
Well, it's different when you're not doing
it looks
something
so uncomfortable.
That's, when you're not doing something that's your norm, right? Like so, Dave's used to playing in front of tons of people. Totally. When you put a guitar in his hand, a bass in his hand, whatever, he's got no problem. And then as soon as you're like, all right, and on the tee from the United States, Dave Farrell. It's like, oh, God.
The pros are going to get some claps. Yay, whatever. And me, I'm like, I'm used to showing up and people get excited. That's a horrible thing to say.
And but, I also need some claps on the first tee just for my ego to get going.
But it was like, from Southern California, you know, Dave Farrell. It's like,
yay.
Well, at St. Andrews, they're probably like, this guy from Southern California is coming over here to play this golf course?
Yeah, I don't think so, pal.
I don't think so. At the Dunhill?
No. Wrong.
Obviously, I play on the PGA Tour, but not everybody knows me. So like I'll go to a tournament. I remember at the PGA a couple of years ago at Baltusrol, there was a guy who was walking down the rope line. This is in a practice round with you, Keegan, Jamie maybe? And Keegan's first off, and everybody's looking to get his autograph. You're right behind him. Everybody's getting your autograph. And I'm behind you. And there's this one guy goes, he's got his flag there. Who's this? What's your name?
What's your name? Do I want you to sign this?
And I'm so upset that, like, because I'm uncomfortable giving autographs anyway, because I don't know if these people want my autograph. It's weird to me that somebody
would
want my autograph.
But you also don't want to be the guy that just walks past the guy with the flag, too, because then you're a jerk.
$1,000 to be able to walk past the autograph station because it's uncomfortable. Because right. I know that they don't know who, really, necessarily, they may not know who I am.
Well, and to that point, too, I think the funny thing is always, like, you don't expect the kids to know who you are, and that's totally fine. Totally. And they just want your autograph. You're a golfer. 100%. That's great. But then when there's adults that want your autograph... But they still don't know who you are. It's
and they're withholding the flag like they don't want you to sign it. So I lost it on this one guy. He's got his flag like tucked to his chest like this. This is after Keegan got his autograph. This is after Brennan got his autograph. And I'm like, I'm just trying to get through this, right? Because then I'm uncomfortable. And he's got his flag like this, and he goes, he's like looking at the bag. I could see him trying to look at like the name on the bag. And I go to him, you want it or not? It's one of my finest moments, actually. And I walked right by him.
And what did he say? No? He
said, nah. I don't even care.
Have either of you guys ever just been in like mid autograph and the person sees somebody like Ricky Fowler and they literally just beeline it and just leave you like standing there with your Sharpie? And
I've had some awful, awful, traumatic experiences with giving autographs.
I guarantee you I've got a better one.
Yeah.
I guarantee it.
Go.
No, you start with yours and then I'll...
I got two. Let me pick one. I'll give you one. This was at Quicken Loans, 2015. Oh, I'm sweating. This is ridiculous. After the practice round. I'm sweating.
Thanks, like, guys.
Forget about it. I'm walking off the 18th green. This little kid, he's dressed in Ricky Fowler's clothes, totally head to toe, Ricky Fowler. His father's right behind him, and he's in the autograph line. So I grab the pen, and I'm like, I guess this kid wants my autograph? I don't know. Like, I have to approach him. I can't be a dickhead and just walk right by the kid. So I go towards him, and he takes the flag that he has and goes, no, no. And the father goes, we're waiting for Ricky. And I go, later, dude. It's a traumatic experience.
You've never been more upset about anything in your life.
I missed the cut.
Well, one of the cool things about Johnny, and I love this about him, he is this fiercely loyal friend. Like, if somebody does something to me, if I tell him a story about, like, this person did this while we were playing or blah, 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 he's like, oh, cool. I hate that guy. I'm never going to be nice to him again. If you wrong him in any way, he will hold a grudge like no one you've ever seen before.
It's the nicest thing he's ever said to me.
It will be... vicious. So this kid has another thing coming.
The next time you see,
it's not the kid. It's not the kid. It's the old man. It's the old man. We're waiting for Ricky.
But I love that about him because we'll get together for dinner after a round or something. It's like, oh, who'd you play with today? Oh, I played with Dave, and Dave said this to me. It's like, okay, no problem. Mentally noted. I'll kill him next time I see him.
Yeah, all good.
It's totally fine. No big deal.
It would be one thing if I wasn't already uncomfortable giving the autographs. Because I don't know, it's just...
You didn't want to give the autograph. You just felt like you had to.
I felt I owed it to them.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that anybody would want my autograph anyway.
Yeah.
So I go to the autograph area, and I assume that they want my autograph. I don't know. It's weird.
And then
it's
they
uncomfortable
go, oh,
for me.
No thanks.
And then they give me the no thanks?
Wow, look out. It's so bad, too, because how many times do they give you, like, the... And what was your name again?
Oh, God.
It's just like, oh.
Brendan.
Sorry.
Take the experience that you guys have and now put it in a band setting, where in a band, especially a band as big as Linkin Park, mm-hmm. you've got six guys. You've got guys who are front men, got role players, rebounders, as I kind of name myself.
You're a rebounder?
I get rebounds.
Yeah, I like that.
If you're a bass player, you kind of, that's your job. You're like the Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, the Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, go get rebounds.
Crucial player, though.
You need to be there.
Keep the play
alive. Absolutely need to be there.
Don't take any of the glory.
Yeah. this is 2000, call it three maybe. I've had the conversation at different points with Mike Shinoda. I hang out with Mike a lot on tour, and I've told him at different stages, look, if we're in a position where somebody comes up and asks for an autograph of him, you don't need to hand it off to me to also sign it.
You want this guy too.
You don't need. And he was like, oh yeah, well, come on, man. Like, if somebody like sees us and we're hanging out,
we're a
like,
team,
they're going to want both autographs, whatever. And I was like, I'm just telling you, Mike, chances are in a lot of cases, they're just recognizing you and they don't have any
getting
clue.
Yeah.
I'm getting rebounds. He's basically like, you have no idea what you're talking about. A day off, we're at a mall, we've gone to a movie, we're waiting for a cab after the fact. Some fans or whatever approach and kind of say, oh, can you sign this napkin for me? He's like, yeah, you know, I'll sign the napkin for you. Mike's always really friendly about that, sign stuff for people. I'm kind of a little bit on his side. I can tell they haven't clued into me at all. They haven't locked into me at all. They don't know who I am. I'm fine with that. But Mike hands me like this napkin that they've asked him to sign with the Sharpie. Said, oh, like here, sign this. At that point, I was almost like, I don't need to sign that. And Mike's like, no, sign it, sign it. I sign it underneath where he signed it. They walk away. I was like, Mike, you realize that they had no clue who I was, right? He's like, oh, kind of like, shut up.
Yeah.
He's like, they wanted both of our signatures. I'm like, pretty sure they didn't. The cab doesn't come. As we're walking across, we walk by an area where there's a trash can. And there at the trash can, the napkin that we have both signed has been ripped. And the part where I signed has been ripped off and they have thrown it in the trash.
No way.
But they haven't completely made it and it's just left sitting there. And
how horrifying
is that? Horrible is that?
So they have taken the napkin that we have both signed and they have separated it and removed my portion that I have signed.
Oh my God.
And thrown it away, but not even thrown it away well enough to where it's like in the trash can. It's just sitting there. Oh. We walked past it and I've never been more vindicated, you know, and all of the like, I told you so moments of anyone's life ever. This was like, I told you so, Mike. Like, look at that. Like, not only did they not want my signature, they literally separated it from yours and threw it in the trash.
There had to be a part of you that was like sad about it. No? Like, oh my God, that's an awful thing to do that.
you're like so
mine is like, wow, oh yeah. My God.
Yeah. Oh, no, we're waiting for Ricky. Long. Okay, who cares?
We're waiting for Ricky.
So if I were to be sad about it, I think what had happened was they just thought like, this is, I don't know who this guy is.
100%,
whenever he signed it.
100%.
I would only be sad about it if they knew this is, you know, Dave, this is Phoenix from the band, and I can't stand that guy. Like, screw that guy.
Hate bass.
I hate bass.
Get rid of bass players
and everything they've ever done. Like,
all of them.
Throwing it away. So I would never, ever take that, like, personally.
Yeah.
Having said that, though, I couldn't have asked for a better result. I could have been more vindicated in the process of that.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
Linkin Park is my favorite band, and Dave Farrell is my 74th favorite bass player.
That guy can go crawl under a rock and die. I hate that guy.
Well, I mean, we get that all the time because we play every practice round with Keegan, and everybody's like, especially if we're on the East Coast.
Don't. He's going to listen to this.
Yeah, I know. It's not a compliment.
What have you done?
Well, Mark, edit this. Everybody goes, Keegan. And people used to call me Keegan. They'd say, oh, Keegan, can you sign this? I'm like, I'm not Keegan. He's right next to me. Like, I'm like, Keegan, it's not even a case of where people thought that I was Keegan and Keegan's somewhere else. It's like, oh, you kind of look like Keegan. No, well, first of all, no, I don't. But second of all, he's four steps away from me.
You guys have very different sized heads. From your hat size.
Keegan has a giant head.
The opposite size heads, yeah.
Keegan has a giant freak head. He wore visors on tour. Everybody's like, oh, bring back the visor and this and that and whatever. He didn't like visors. He only wore visors because they couldn't get a hat big enough for his head until after he won the PGA. Mm. And they're like, okay, I guess we have to make you a custom hat so it fits on your giant dome.
Like 8 1/4.
And then I have the opposite effect.
Plus.
I've had to have Wilson create a children's hat. Mark knows this. Mark's like,
yeah. I was like, I want one of those steely hats. I got to have one. I got to wear it to like follow you around. You give it to me. I was stoked to go to put it on. It's like, stuck on the top of my, it was a yarmulke.
Yeah. And then I get a text
from Mark. My 2-year-old wears it now.
I get a text from Mark like 2 weeks later and he's like, do you have any of those steely hats that don't come in children's small? I'm like, no, unfortunately, that's all I've got. Can't help you out. Yes. But I have giant ears to make up for
you. Have they giant have to, headphones on right now.
They have to
give you have a giant voice so is, to make up for.
This is
well.
How bad. There's a lot of things that I do wrong. But my head is small. My ears are huge. So they have to bring me like special earphones that don't make my ears hurt too bad. Although they're kind of throbbing at the moment anyway. So I guess they're still a little too small. And then I'm so loud. John said that in our practice round today, they lasered me.
No. Okay, so we're on the third hole. It's only been three holes in the practice round this morning. And Brendan's been so loud these first three holes that we have to document what the hell's going on with Brendan? He's so loud. And we're texting with Keegan at the time. Oh. And Brendan's being so loud today.
I'm not included on the text.
This is a side bang. Yeah, this is total text. Side.
That's how you know you're really talking shit, is when I'm not even included on the text. That's real shit. That's not even fake shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we're on the third green, and I look at Ballo and I say, can you hear him from here? He's on the fourth tee at the time. So he's on the fourth tee, and I look at Ballo and I say, how far away could he be? And Ballo gets out the laser. He's 89 yards away. We could hear him as clear as you can hear me talk right now.
I'm basically a football field and you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't help it. Anastasia is telling me all the time. She always does the like the hand motion where it's like, bring it down, ooh, you know, ooh. Which is, you want to talk about being
does she ever give you the remote?
No, she doesn't give me the remote, which good. Is nice. But she
I
gives
do,
me
I
the
do
like.
That to my family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark sends me the first episode of the podcast to listen to unedited. Hasn't helped any of the sound whatsoever, and I'm listening to it and I'm just like, oh my god, I'm screaming into the microphone right now
every time Brendan
absolutely
gets excited
screaming. Yeah, and I can't control it. It's so bad. I mean, it's like a disease that I have.
Yeah.
And then fortunately Mark edited the shit out of it just to help me to like not sound like a super freak. But then the next one we did, I'm like way far away from the mic.
We were with
Mark's
Trey,
like waving me in. Yeah,
we were with Trey. You're like 3 yards back from the microphone.
I'm like across the room going like, I'm terrified of the mic, you know. So now, even right now, I'm trying to be really quiet.
Going back to families, Brendan, you are a new father of a few months. Do you have any advice for your good friend here, John, who is only weeks away from his first child?
Yeah, I mean, super exciting. We've got babies flying everywhere.
Can't wait.
One of the things that my wife, Anastasia, and I talk about a lot is that people don't seem to be that honest about how hard it is. Mm. Because they want to act like, oh, we got this covered. It's so easy.
Yeah,
it's no problem.
We're
yeah. Oh, how's the baby doing? Oh, great. No problem. Sleeping. Never cries. Never upset. Like, they're going to be upset all the time. And, I mean, doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. Yeah. You're lucky you've got some family that can help you here and there. And, like, as much help as you can get just to figure things out. It's not like you have a manual. We come home from the hospital and we're just like, oh, my God, what do we do now?
Oh.
And you're terrified. You think they're so fragile. Like if you make one wrong move, they're just going to break in a million pieces. And luckily they're pretty resilient. Yeah.
I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm not one of the people who are like, yay, like it's so easy. It's so great.
You're going to have so much fun right away and you won't have any problems. And it's just so simple.
I think you've told me once before that you don't even like your kids until they're like 2.5 or 3.
Oh, God.
My kids listen to
something to that effect.
That is true. I don't like
Dad, you've only liked me for 4 years.
When we had our first, we had like an emergency C-section. So we're on day 3 of having the baby. She's still recovering from that major surgery, and it's kind of at that point all on me. And so we're getting ready to leave the hospital, and the nurses by law are required to not help you put the baby into the car seat. It's almost
it's like the only test you have to pass
at the very end.
I guess yeah. So we're leaving the hospital, getting ready to go home. I have a 3.5-day-old baby. I don't know what I'm doing, and my wife is like just undergone a major surgery and she's like on painkillers. She doesn't even know where she is. Like she just wants to get out of the hospital. So it's all kind of falling on me. I've never, ever put a kid into a car seat at this point. Not a 2-year-old, not a 1-year-old, not a 6-month-old, not a newborn infant. I've never put anything into a car seat. What am I doing? And they are not allowed to help you because of, you know, probably liability issues, which makes sense.
I guess.
They can just kind of sit on the sidelines and coach me. And so I'm trying to figure out, like, I've got a 3-day-old baby that's crying. I'm, like, stress sweating. I've got, like...
It's 55 degrees and you've got sweat ripping out of your body.
I already have insane, like, I've got anxiety issues to begin with. And on top, like, with this, in the last 3 days I've undergone, it's off the charts. I'm, like, redlining. I'm about to, like, pass out as, like,
They're going to have to strap you into a car seat.
My body's going into, like, fight or flight response. And I'm trying to put, like, the most delicate little thing into this car seat that's way too big for it and, like, strap it in. And all I have is somebody who's kind of giving, like, feedback or commentary on it. I'm like, this is so messed up. And then carrying it out and then trying to, like, click it into the stupid little receptor thing for the car seat. Just an absolute disaster. But that's what you've got to look forward to.
Was the base on the seat when you arrived at the hospital?
The base was on the seat. And even that for me, like to get the base anchored into the car.
Is this APA? Are we talking about APA right now?
APA?
The APA baby?
APA baby.
I don't even know what that is. That's probably before my...
Oh, is it really?
Maybe generation. After your time.
I come from a generation when you had to like, you had cars that maybe didn't even have anchors and you had to like figure out how to anchor the seat into the thing. You couldn't just like, I know now that you can like seat belt them in. Our car at the time, we had to create an anchor point and all this stuff.
I feel like that's the same as what you have.
Now, we're able to jam it into the... There's anchors in the seats that are very helpful, but...
I can't get mine to... We did it before I left. Played in Hawaii last week, and we did it before I left just in case. We put in the base of the car seat in this, in the thing. We couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
It was in, but and it was centered and it was all that. And then we put the car seat attached to the base and it would like wiggle around.
I could dial you in like...
We're going to go to the fire department.
5 minutes. Fire department. Yeah. They'll help you. Yeah. For sure.
I mean, we did it in advance, just trying to figure it out. Bones, actually. So Phil's longtime caddy, Jim McKay, Bones, awesome guy. He
does
comes
car seats?
comes up to me in Boston and he says, hey, so baby's coming soon. And I go, yeah, baby's coming soon, you know, month and a half or whatever it was at the time. He goes, I got one piece of advice for you. I said, yeah, lay it on me. I'm taking it from all sides right now. Yeah. Like whoever's got anything to say to me, I'll listen. And he goes, learn how to use the car seat. Because he's like, when we had our first kid, I'm in there trying to figure out how to use the car seat, and my wife's just like, I'm having the baby, and I'm doing this stuff, and you can't even figure out how to do the car seat? And he's like, nope, I can't figure it out. It's ridiculous.
Once you get your baby in the car seat, you'll drive home, and you'll never drive slower in your life.
What's he doing over there?
We only live maybe just over a mile from the hospital, right, where we're at. So it's a left. And then a right. I truly feel, this is going to sound odd, but I truly feel I was made to be a father.
You were. Sound
weird. I swear to God, I cannot wait. I cannot wait. It's not this 19% alcohol beer that I'm drinking. Yeah, I know. It's
not the Vindictive 2.
It's not the Vindictive
2. Or the Chocolate Rain.
Or the Hoplock.
Or the Friendsgiving. You have a lot of different angles going here. I actually felt the same way. I mean, Anastasia and I were never even sure that we wanted kids for a long time. Like, we got married because we liked each other, not because we wanted to have kids. At some point, I realized, like, I can't go through life without experiencing this. Sounds amazing.
Go on.
And I also felt like I could be a good girl dad.
Totally.
You know, I don't even know what that means, but I'm like, I'm totally fine with like the let's go to ballet and let's go to let's play princess and tea parties and whatever. Like, that doesn't bother me in any way. I'm not like oh, this is terrible, I wanted to play football and do whatever. Like, I would have been great with that too, but like, I'm totally fine with, and Dave can probably speak to this having three girls, but I was excited about having a girl in the sense that like, I never had a sister, I didn't have that like feminine touch, if you will, like, and so I was totally fine with it. I wasn't like, because I know a lot of my friends have always been like, oh, I gotta have a boy, if you're having a girl you're so screwed and whatever, and maybe I'll change my mind when she's 15.
Yeah, what's your thing about boys and girls? Boys will like torture you when they're little, and then girls will break your heart.
I thought this is where you hit the edit button for
I'm editing this out for sure.
For boys, you worry about one pecker. For girls, you worry about all the peckers.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't it.
I've heard that one too.
That wasn't it.
My friends who have sons, you got to worry about how to keep them engaged and entertained as far as like physically. Like, you've got to create a game, you've got to create a thing for them to do. And if you don't, they're just going to straight up destroy the house. Like, they're going to figure out their own pastime, and it's going to be like, how high can I throw the lamp? And for girls will be more passive in a sense. Like, they'll chill and they won't be as like physically destructive, but you've got to figure out how to engage them almost like socially and mentally, and eventually they will grow up to absolutely like destroy your soul. Like, they won't destroy your house.
Terrific.
But they will annihilate you, like, on a spiritual
from
or a soul level. Yeah, they will break you down conversationally and annihilate you at like the most core level. And it speaks to like the difference between, you know, guys and girls and guys and girl relationships. Like, guys, you're like, yeah, we can hang out. Like, if we've got beef, like if me and Brendan got beef, well, we're gonna step outside and we're gonna handle it.
We do that all the time.
Yeah. There might be a couple blows thrown, but at the end of it, we're like, all right, we figured it out. We're going to hug it out. Like, girls, no. You're going to battle emotionally and psychologically and conversationally, and they're going to wear you down, and they're going to absolutely win. That's one thing I've learned in 15 plus years of marriage, is I cannot outlast my wife.
No chance.
Yeah, I can get really angry, and I can get really hot, and I can burn like, but that's going to run its course, and she's a marathoner when it comes to that, and she's going to like absolutely annihilate me when it comes to
tortoise
being upset
in the hair
with me. Yeah, she's going to win every time. I don't have the wherewithal to do it. I'm just emotionally weak when it comes to that.
When I found out I was having a girl, I wasn't as worried about the teenage years. I know that's a thing, and like, I get it. That's going to be gnarly. But I had figured in my life that I was pretty sure that I wasn't going to go to prison. Fairly certain. Now, after having a girl, my percentage chance went significantly up. Now, it may have only gone to like 5% or something.
Oh,
but
good God.
If a guy does something to her, I'm going to kill him. Like, it's just the way, it's just the bottom line. Like, I have a lot of big friends, and they're going to come over, and we're going to kill them together, and we'll dispose of the body. Yeah. And if they find us, then I'm going to have to do some hard time.
Totally. We're really sending John into this journey with a lot of confidence here.
So, Johnny, talk to me a little bit about music, the role it's played in your life. I know Linkin Park's been a big, you said at one point, a soundtrack to your adolescence. Mm-hmm. As well as, we've talked a lot about on Sirius XM, we love Turbo, we love 90s and 2000s rock. And I think there's something about that that almost like time stamps your life. You know, like we've talked about whether you're playing mini tours, college, you know, whatever, like you can hear a song and you can go back to that specific time. Totally. It's got some sort of a memory for you.
I remember Hybrid Theory, and I remember, I can't remember what grade I was in, maybe ninth grade, eighth grade. I would sketch out like graffiti words or names, and I would be listening to like Crawling or something like that. I can picture it. I hear the song and I go back there, and as vividly as anything. But in terms of like 90s and 2000s rock, it's that's my genre, 100%.
That's the same with me. And I don't know if it's just because of the time in my life and if that will always be the case or what that was, if I'm just so impressionable at that time, like in high school and college and like when I was playing mini tours and traveling around the country. And it just means the music means a little bit more to me, I think, from that time of my life.
It's like you're 22 to 25, pre-PGA Tour.
I mean, I remember there was a lot of Meteora in there. I was always big into Rob Zombie, Marilyn Manson, Nine Inch Nails, all of that stuff. I don't like to give Dave compliments or anything that Dave had to deal with. But
who's Dave?
Dave who? There's no Dave in Linkin Park. It's only Phoenix.
That's very true.
But obviously, I mean, Hybrid Theory, Meteora, like you get started with that, it kind of changed the game, if you will. It was totally such a different kind of thing. And so that was a lot of the stuff that I listened to. And in those days, we didn't have the music as readily accessible as we do now. You know, you had to actually have the CD, put it in your car. Like it was
or
no
the mix CD.
Yeah. It was no iPod. It was no Spotify. It was no, you couldn't just be like, oh, let me play that song for you.
The only other time that I have like a vivid musical, like, transportation or whatever, is we had Keegan and I had, we were driving around playing in the mini tours. We were playing Hooters Tour and we were driving to Texas and we had Sigur Rós. Do you know Sigur Rós?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we have that album. I don't know. What album it was, maybe Parentheses or something, but we had like a couple of their big hits. Like whenever I hear those songs, I think of that car ride from Florida, from Orlando to Houston, Texas, playing in stupid bullshit like little tour events.
Right, you have like three CDs.
Yeah, I mean, it is vivid.
Like, and you get in the car and you drive 15 hours.
Oh yeah, 18. And it's,
yeah, 18. Drive. There you go. I was shortchanging you. I was traveling through all of Canada, you know, from Victoria to Montreal. Mm-hmm. You know, I had my DVD player that I had. I would get the live music DVDs because I'm a live music junkie, right? So I love the concerts. I love getting out to shows and everything. And so, I mean, I remember having like the Nine Inch Nails live and All That Could Have Been album. And I would play that on my little portable DVD player, which would only hold a charge for like an hour and a half. I mean, what a nightmare to trying to listen to music.
What did we do? What did we do back then?
I don't know. And that was like state of the art.
Kids these days have it so easy.
So easy.
They don't even know. They don't even
know what we snowed both ways.
I was in a bunk in a tour bus listening to my Sony Walkman, Discman, and it would run out of batteries and bleh.
Yeah, what a nightmare.
Oh, man.
I'd only have like CD book of like 12 CDs for the entire
CD
tour.
Book. And the CD would get scratched. Case logic and book. The thing would go like.
And remember when somebody got their CD stolen out of their car, it was like, what a nightmare. Yeah. I cannot put this catalog of music back together again. It doesn't matter how many friends have a burner or who's got what. It's like imagine the amount of hours it's going to take to reload my entire case of CDs.
Brutal.
Tough times. I mean, I think that's something that Johnny and I've always bonded over too. Is like we always like the same. We're constantly sending music back and forth to each other. We're always trying to find new stuff, which can be hard.
Yeah,
it can be hard to find stuff that
we found something new. Was it 2 years ago? Who the hell was it? Bring Me the Horizon.
Bring Me the Horizon.
It was live.
It was something alive.
I've never
it was
heard
a,
that.
You know
song,
what? It was a live Bring Me the Horizon on Sirius XM. Which, a couple funny things about Bring Me the Horizon. I know that
Ollie
was at the Celebration of Life, and I thought he was amazing. Like, tons of energy. Was like, I know he grew up as a huge fan of Linkin Park. I think that was his first show, or as the story goes.
Yep.
I became a big fan of Bring Me the Horizon, and it's one of the few bands that currently is kind of new, coming out. I know they've been around for a few years, but that I really kind of fell in love with. And I played a couple songs for Anastasia, and she was like, sounds like they ripped off Linkin Park.
Really?
That's word for word, that's what she said. And I was like, well,
that's cool.
I think there's influence there, but I don't know that they like ripped off a specific song.
I like them. They're good.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's always great in some senses when you hear somebody say that, like from my perspective, yeah. Because when I hear Bring Me the Horizon, I'm hearing some Linkin Park influences, but I'm also hearing them enjoying and referencing influences that we also share. To Anastasia's defense, or to that person's defense that were to say that, like, we've also ripped off our own set of people that we always loved. Like, that's how music works. Like, that's how creativity works. Like, nobody's going out and straight up inventing something, like some sound that's entirely their own. Like,
nobody's ever heard anything like this before. Yeah, has like, no influence.
We're not playing guitars or drums or bass or whatever. Like, this, we're playing, this is a fish, and like, this over here, like, that's me banging almonds together. And
you can't even play spoons and say that nobody's done it.
Yeah. Every, like, at this stage in music, I think everybody who's in music or who's an artist or a musician would readily admit that you're standing on the shoulders of giants, and those go back to whether it's classical music as your influences, or whether it's original R&B, whether it's whatever. Like, we're all referencing something else and trying to push it in our own direction and bring our own creativity and flair to it. But nobody's writing music in a vacuum.
Nobody's writing anything like a Hybrid Theory now. It's all going a different direction and doing, you know, whatever. And to me, like, kind of that Bring Me the Horizon gave me those same kind of emotions and same kind of feelings, at least, where I was like, wow, this is really cool. I love the kind of the texture of this.
Right.
You know, if that makes sense.
Creatively, when it comes to an album like Hybrid Theory, you're always going to get some feedback, or I'm always going to get some feedback with that. That's like, that's like your guys' best album, or why don't you guys write something that's more like Hybrid Theory or Meteora? The issue with that is that if we were to write that now, or if we were to direct that now, or if somebody else were to kind of write an album directed towards that being the goal, it automatically would sound derivative. It would sound uninspired. It would sound like something that's referencing something that's already happened. And so it wouldn't carry with it the same punch that those albums potentially do. If you're being honest, your ground zero for Hybrid Theory is that when that album came out, it was very heavily criticized. Rolling Stone gave it 2.5 out of 5 stars. Hmm. Like, it was attacked as, like, these guys are kind of doing a thing that's like Limp Bizkit meets Korn meets whatever and blah, blah, blah. Like, it wasn't critically acclaimed. That's what I'm saying. Obviously, there was a ton of people who found it and loved it. But it wasn't, from my perspective and from where we were at as a band, it was never like, like, this is the best thing that's ever happened.
Look out, everybody loves this.
And that's why from the get-go, we always had a chip on our shoulder. And so when you fast forward 10 years, you know, and we're doing albums like Living Things, and we're doing albums like
Thousand Suns.
Yeah, Thousand Suns, and we're doing things that are like more creatively expressive and pushing ourselves in different ways. You kind of have to release it. You see what happens with your fan base. You hope people like it, but you've got to kind of wait a little bit of time to see where that sits. And even like, not only where, like, how, what you think about it, but I have to feel like I've got to be a couple of years removed before I know what I feel about it. You know, like, I look back at it and say, like, that song's fucking awesome, and that song, I'd change a lot of stuff about that.
With golf and probably with music as well, it's the better you play or the more successful you get, the more that's expected from you, right? So like, if you're
you become a bigger target.
Yeah,
you come around to the point where you realize that I've got to be happy with what I'm doing. You know, for me, I feel like when you write a song, you always have in the back of your mind that you're gonna hope that other people like it. You're gonna hope that other people are on board, but you've gotta love it first. You've almost gotta like serve your own desires and your own needs for what you want to do expressively or creatively as like the foundation. And your own individual tastes and interests change. You know, you hope your fan base comes along with you. You hope that they stay on board. Like, there's nothing that I love more than our fans who have been on that journey for 15 plus years, you know, 20 years. That doesn't mean that, like, I don't appreciate somebody less who just likes the early stuff, or somebody less who found us just on the last album. You could be 10 years old and the only song you know of Linkin Park, the only song you've heard is Heavy, yeah, and you love it. It doesn't mean that that means more or less to me than somebody who also loves Hybrid Theory. It's in a weird way, like, equal. Like, they've appreciated something that we've done and it means something to them. And as an artist, that's what you want to do, is you want to connect. John, like what you were saying as far as that car ride, like, that's the magic of doing music, is you want somebody to have that memory of, yeah, like, I drove with a best friend of mine for these 16 hours or whatever it was, and this is what we listened to, and that's, like, imprinted in my brain.
And I hear that song now, and I go back to that.
Yeah, that's the win. Yeah. Like, that's a really, really incredible spot for any artist to kind of achieve that.
I can imagine.
Yeah. In golf, it's almost like the same thing is true, in the sense that something becomes chaseable or desirable when it has success, whether that's like Tiger Woods in his different permutations of his swing, or whether that's like this is the move that Dustin Johnson makes to have his power that he has, or this is his bowed wrist, or this is blah 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 blah, right? If you were to see certain aspects of that at different points before it was successful, it might be heavily criticized. But there's so much of it that relies upon 2020 hindsight being like, this is succeeding because this person has embraced who they are and what they're doing, and they presented it, and it's like, this is who I am.
Yeah.
And then it's been successful. And then after the fact, you start to like deconstruct it, right? You start to like take it apart and say, like, you can emulate this and this and this, or this is how they've done it. Like, do it for yourself. But the reality is that the success doesn't lie in the fact that they're making that move, or musically they're doing that sound, or whatever. The success lies more in the fact that, like, they're owning who they are and what they want to do and how they want to do it.
There's tons of guys on tour that win, and you look at them, and they're not the Dustin Johnsons, they're not the Jordan Spieths, and you're like, who's that guy? But they've kind of settled in with who they are and what they do to play well, mm-hmm, and they do that, and that's all that matters to them.
For you, what is that part of your game?
I love Conor McGregor. I know he's can be a crazy person, but I love the fact that he talks positively to himself, and he like emits this like confidence of what's going to happen, and he's not afraid to say it. I've tried to kind of emulate that over the last year or so. I mean, I think that could be one of my stronger suits, and then I think physically, maybe, I don't know. I honestly don't feel like I attain any.
I completely disagree. But I mean, I think John is world class wedge player, chipper, putter. You give John a hybrid into a par four, and he's going to hit it closer than Dustin Johnson hits an 8-iron most of the time. Most of the time.
Go on.
I don't agree, but continue. I mean, there's so many things that he does that are unbelievable. And one of the things that I've always appreciated about John's game, because I've struggled with this a lot, is that I feel like when John plays a great first two rounds and he's like in the top 10, in the top five, whatever he is, has a chance to win the tournament, you know it's going to be a good week. There's never a 77 on Sunday coming from John. It's always like, I got a sniff of the lead and I'm going to play awesome. And there's been a couple playoffs that could have gone your way, that that's neither here nor there. But I mean, you always give yourself a chance when you're playing well. You finish the job.
Thank you, Brandon.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, I appreciate you. I remember the first playoff that I lost in Puerto Rico, which is a great event, but it's a smaller PGA Tour event. I thought it was the end of the world. I was like, man, I don't know if I'm ever going to be in a position like that to win a golf tournament again. It sucks. 6 months later, I'm in a playoff at Memorial, arguably the biggest tournament I've ever played in.
You're talking a premier tournament.
It's a premier event. No,
get a handshake
about it.
From Jack Nicklaus.
I always think if I had won that tournament in Puerto Rico, I wouldn't have been in where I was at Memorial, even though I lost the playoff at Memorial. So I feel like a lot of those playoffs happen for a reason, and whatever happens for a reason, I guess.
And you learn a lot from that stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, my dad always says that. He's always like, experience is what you get when you don't get what you want. You know, and I'm like, what does that even mean? And then you think about it and you go,
oh my God.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh yeah, totally. This is totally right.
I don't want any more experience.
Yeah. I'm done with experience. I just want to be like, experience. Give me the trophy and take away the experience. How about that?
Now.
The trophy is what you get when you don't get any experience.
Yeah. I got no experience, but I got a trophy.
So you guys are both professional athletes, but you also play a sport that is very individual, right? How important is it for you to have a close group of friends through this process to connect with from tournament to tournament, year to year? Does that help you, motivate you?
For me, I know it's always helped me. As much as these guys we talked about earlier, the guys aren't like rah-rah encouragement guys. Like if I say, hey, John, take a look at this. What do you think? He'll give me an honest opinion and he'll help me. Or John, what do you think about when you do this? How do you hit this shot? What do you think about this hole? We talk about that stuff all the time and we're mm-hmm. always trying to help each other, which is pretty cool because we're at the end of the day, we're competing against each other. But I think with golf, you understand that there's only so many weeks that you have a chance to win, one. And then number two, you also kind of accept the fact that like, if I do everything that I'm supposed to do, it's going to be a great week. Regardless of whether John does everything he's supposed to do or the mm-hmm. other 150 guys do whatever they're supposed to do. So you get this little group that you're willing to help each other and support each other. And then you kind of block out everybody else. That's kind of how I feel. It's like, well, I don't need to help everybody else, but like our little group of, you know, 4, 5, 6 guys, yeah. like you do anything for those guys.
We're very, very, very lucky and fortunate to have the people that the group that we have around us. Obviously, I'm fortunate to be playing where I am. But if I'm the only one of our friends in a tournament, I'm like, oh, God. There's a little bit of like, oh, well, I wish like Steely was here. I wish Keegan was here.
It's a tough week that way.
Jamie was here.
It's not that fun.
It's an individual sport, but it's almost like a little mini side team because it's a long year. If you were out there by yourself every week for a year plus, I couldn't imagine it.
It's, I mean, the weeks where I'm by myself, it's
10 years ago,
no
if
fun.
You told me to, that, like, oh, if I heard that, I'd have been like, oh, shut up. I'll
shut
take
up.
That.
You're playing the PGA Tour. Yeah, get out of my
up.
Face.
You're playing the PGA
I'll
Tour.
I'll figure it out. But I'll find a friend to hang out with. Jeez, what a loser.
I go to the movies by myself.
Yeah, it's fine. Double feature.
Order room service.
Double feature and room service with a bottle of wine. Suck it up.
It's enjoy. We enjoy it. The more you enjoy everything, the better you are at it.
I'm getting hungry.
Let's go.
Dinner time? John, it's customary here to announce that you came as a guest. You okay. leave as a member. Do you have any parting words for the member guest audience?
Parting words for me would be, this is a very cool experience. I think what you guys got going on is really cool. You're tying in golf and maybe a musical audience that doesn't necessarily know or... I've never known about golf. It's not necessarily an old man sport, and it's something that could be looked into and a lot of fun. So I think what you guys are doing is really cool. And to be here with Dave and Mark and Brendan, I'll see him every week.
Yeah, I mean,
he can
give me some credit,
he can screw. Thank you for the intro, though. I really appreciate it.
Lastly, where can people follow you on socials?
You can follow me on JohnCurran333 Instagram.
Which has a lot of his art on there as well.
Check it out. Actually, the PGA Tour just wrote an article about my artwork.
Did they? And the art is great. I didn't get a chance to say that earlier, but I...
Really?
Yeah, I've checked it out. It's awesome. Gosh.
Maybe we'll do the next album.
We'll share some of your
album
artwork.
Cover. Yeah. Or home art pieces.
I can do a garage like that.
Do a face of Mark for Dave.
Yes.
What about the new Brendan Steele... at home launch monitor hitting bay little
yeah, that's oh in it that is patent pending at the moment.
You have a hitting bay coming?
We were discussing it. It's not imminent.
Okay. So Instagram.
Cool. Instagram JohnCurran333 and then JohnCurranGolf on Twitter.
Excellent.
Yeah.
For us, Brendan, what are we?
I mean, it's a good question because John was like, oh, yeah, you guys are doing a podcast. And I was like, well, Yeah, we are doing podcasts, but that's kind of like the jumping off point for us. Like, we may always do the podcast, but this is where we're starting, and then we're moving on from here into to other endeavors. And Dave, when he kind of launched this idea to Mark and I, was like, don't limit this at all.
Well, you can follow us on Member Guest Official on Instagram, Member Guest on Twitter, member-guest.com is our website.
See you there.
See you there.
See you there.
May your drives fly straight and your guitar say
stay tuned. Somebody else say that one.
May your drives fly straight and your guitar say stay what? May stay your tuned? Drives fly straight and your guitar stay tuned. Until next... Damn it.
Here we go. Ready? Everybody on three. One, two, three.
May your drives fly straight. One more time. May your drives fly straight and your guitars stay tuned. Until next time. Adios.
Later.
Thanks, Johnny.
Yeah, thanks.